So how are you doing tonight?
Really well.
I'm so glad that you braved traffic and fought your way up Central Expressway. And for some of you, I think this is almost like coming to Oklahoma, isn't it? Did you pack an overnight bag? You probably should. And I want to affirm you, validate you, that you would come out of my big email blast advertising this. It shows that you're absolutely very interested in learning about marriage, connection, intimacy, attraction, desire. And if nothing else, perhaps this can form a basis for a good dialogue for you with your spouse or the person you're in a relationship with. I think it's going to be interesting. I hope you will find it interesting. So the topic, the reason I have entitled this The Challenge of Marriage and Desire, and I'm really defining marriage as a long-term, emotionally committed relationship. It's long-term. It's emotionally committed relationship. It's not just a civil arrangement. There's an emotional commitment. And the challenge, as you can see, usually with the word desire, which if you've ever wondered and thought, what does desire indicate? A longing. Something wanted. It comes from the Latin desiderare, from the stars. It's like when you look up at the stars and it produces something in your heart and your soul, a longing or a beacon that is flashing way off in the distance, and you say, I wonder what's over there. It's desire. It's longing. It's a wanting of something. Now, the challenge that we're going to trace our way through is the connection of a long-term, emotionally committed relationship with the word desire, with the word attraction, with the word connection. It would seem for many, and we're going to talk about this tonight, desire flows freely before marriage. Desire, attraction seem to float effortlessly. Post-marriage, it would seem, is more troublesome, challenging, and difficult. Let's talk about why. Pre-commitment, it flows freely, effortlessly. All it takes is one thought or one sight of the other in the other's presence, and desire seems to come alive. Why? Is it natural? That's an important word we're going to talk about. Why post-commitment is the challenge to keep desire alive? Whereas before the commitment, the challenge seemed to be to channel desire and keep it channeled, if not for some, under wraps. Like, oh my gosh, we've got to really be careful about all of this desire. So that's the reason for the title. The challenge of marriage is the oxymoron of passionate marriage. Do the two go together? Some would say, not so sure, where did the passion go? Why did it go? Honestly, is sex natural? What about sex and sexual intimacy is natural? Do you believe it is natural? What do we mean by the word natural? Now, some of you, most of you know who I am. I'm Billy Grammer. I'm a licensed professional counselor, licensed marriage and family therapist, certified sexual therapist. I like to tell people that on August 10th, 1987, I began a practice. So if you can add up the years, let's say I've averaged 35 client hours a week, which I have from 1987 to the present, times 50 weeks a year, times 27 years and 6 months, it gives me 48,000 hours meeting with people. Now, if you go with Malcolm Gladwell, the writer of Blink and Outliers, he says it takes 10,000 hours to become proficient and an expert at your craft. Well, I've got 48,000 and counting, so I don't know if I'm an expert, but I have met with a lot of people. It doesn't qualify me if I've been brain dead the whole time and not paid attention to what I'm doing. It just means I've been wasting a lot of people's time. I hope that isn't the case. So I've done classes, workshop, continuing education units for other therapists, marriage, sexual issues. I specialize in affair recovery, sexual addiction, normal marital sexuality, sexual dysfunctions, which are normal in life. You're going to see that. Personal growth with individuals, couples, systems, including I've helped business with their business relationships, all kinds of relationships, and I'm a systems specialist, so I like family systems because I like to understand what's going on. There's always a good reason why something seems to be going wrong. We're going to talk about that in just a few minutes. Okay? So that's a little bit about who I am. Oops, I'm sorry, let me go back. Now, our time together, we've got 6 classes. You know, this is not a workshop. I'm not going to embarrass you. You're not going to pair off with the person sitting next to you and do anything. I'm not going to ask you to do anything except interact, ask some questions, be interested, and enjoy. This is for you. It's not a substitute for therapy, so if you're having some very challenging issues, this is not going to be the panacea for where you are. This is a class setting with great information, a forum to learn something, which I think could be very valuable for where you are. So from 7 to 7:40, I'm going to talk a little bit. You're free to interact. We'll take a brief stand-up break, get some coffee, some cookies for 10 minutes, then we'll come back and we'll do it again until 8:30. Now, this is designed to be very positive, empowering, enhancing, growth-producing. It's a good, relaxed time. It's something to come to on a Tuesday night, and I'm so glad you have. I'll also have some reading material on the website, which you can see is billygrammardallas.com/springclass.en.html. It must be typed exactly that way, a capital S and a capital C, or you won't be able to access it. That's the URL. I sent you the link on Sunday evening. I sent you an email with this link. So some of you have accessed that already. Good for you. Way to go. Every Tuesday evening after this class, I'm going to upload this class because I'm recording it right now to digital, audio digital. It's going to upload automatically in MP3 format so you can access any class that you happen to miss. All right? Now, I would ask you, not that you would, not that you're thinking about doing this. Look, you are very free to share the handouts with anybody. You're very free to say, I'm attending this very interesting class. I'm learning some neat things. Let me show you what I'm learning. I want you to do that. What I would ask you not to do is give them the URL to the class, the website, so that they access it and they listen to everything. This is just designed for you. You're attending. You're the paid registrants. This is for you. If you happen to miss a class, you can access it. So please don't share the website with people and go, oh, go to this website, you can listen to the class. I'm taking such a neat class. Don't do that, please. If your spouse isn't here, I'm going to ask you not to share it with them. You can share your materials with them. If they're going to listen to everything and access everything, you know, be so kind to send me a check, okay? Thank you. You get it. I know you get the spirit of it. Now, this is very important. Some basics. I really do wish to have your involvement in co-creating the class. I do not suppose nor presuppose that everything I'm going to say is going to match exactly where you are in your life. I'm going to say some interesting things. I'm going to present some interesting material. But quite honestly, beyond class 4, I only have broad outlines. I'm making it up as I go. Truly, because I'm convinced I got enough material out of 28 years of doing this, I'm not troubled about material. What I want to know is, what are you looking for? Okay? I'm not asking you to share it right now, but there are 3x5 cards and my email address. If you have any topic at all that you want me to cover, if you want any question at all, and you say, I'm curious about X, Y, or Z, I will seriously consider your request and weave it into the content of the class. You can be a co-creator of this class. I do not want anybody to say, I really went 6 times and didn't get a thing out of it. That is not the idea. You can get something out of it. I want to know what you want, and I will address it. I won't use your name. I'll just weave it into the content that I'm teaching. And you'll say, yay, he talked about that. I was hoping he would talk about it. So please co-create the class with me. You're welcome to do that. Send me an email. Now, what is not helpful is please do not share with me your whole life history and your marriage and then say, after 3 pages of single-spaced typed out, what do you think I should do? Because I'll probably send you a single request back, please book an appointment. Okay? So be objective, make it topical, and say, wow, I've always been curious about X, Y, or Z in marriage. Help me understand it. I'll weave it in, promise you. I want you to do that. Okay? Yay. Now, a few thoughts as we begin, right? Here's one thought, and I said it in my email to you. My goal is to connect with you in a relaxed sort of way. I can be an information junkie. I've confessed that. I love information. I got so many books. I love it. It's inspiring to me. However, I just want to relax and slow down and connect. I'm not going to rush through anything. If we make it past 10 PowerPoint slides tonight, so be it. I'll pick up next week. What I'm not going to do is try to rush to get a certain amount in and actually overwhelm you with too much material that your head is swimming and you go, wow, I can't take all that in. Let's don't do that. So relax. If you've looked ahead and said, oh my gosh, you have 25 PowerPoint slides and we're only on number 4. Don't worry about it. We'll get there. I just want to make sure I give you something very valuable. Okay, so how about a few thoughts? I want you to be able to embrace what I'm calling a personal growth approach to relationships, especially marriage. I will each week say something about what I mean by a personal growth approach. Each week, I'm going to give you a little bit of a nugget on what I mean. So here's a little nugget. I want you to give up all hope of ever teaching, influencing, and correcting your spouse to be who you want them to be. I want to rip all hope away from you. If you believe that you're going to make your marriage and your relationship better by communicating more to your spouse to effectively influence and change them, I want you to see that that will cause unremitting power struggles and you won't be successful. Now, you can talk about what you wish and want and prefer. I'm going to encourage that. Your best approach to improving your relationship is absolutely confront your own self and your own growth and where you're lacking in your own growth. If you will do that, you may increase the desire in your spouse to actually like you, respect you, and want to be with you, which is the idea of this class. If you do not do that and you focus on your spouse, I guarantee you, you will kill all desire in them to connect with you sexually, intimately, and trust and believe in you because they're already on to you. They understand why you're communicating with them. Do you know the number one reason people in a relationship share their emotions? Is to influence and correct the other person. Please write that down. The number one reason one person says, I feel angry, is not to personally take responsibility and share where they are to be intimate. It's to suggest you are causing it and I want you to take responsibility for what I'm feeling. We are naturally people who try to influence, teach, and correct and wiggle out our own personal growth. We will do anything we can to wiggle out our own personal growth. So many couples who come to me and say, you know, our problem is communication. Most of the time, the problem is not communication. The communication is working very well because here's what they're doing. Here's what they're doing. I want you to notice the first three. They're saying, I want you to listen to me. I want you to understand me. I want you to validate what I'm saying. so that you will do what I want you to do and change what I want you to change. Now, they combine the first three with the last two. If I can get you to listen to me, nod your head and understand me, validate what I'm saying, then you're naturally going to do what I'm requesting, and you're going to make the changes that so desperately I want to be happy. The first three are effective communication. The last two has nothing to do with effective communication. I can listen to you, affirm you, validate what you're saying, and absolutely disagree with you and not do what you want me to do. We are communicating very well, thank you. So good communication does not mean you can get the other person to do what you want them to do. This is a personal growth approach to relationship. You're going to confront yourself, look at your own life, look at your own deficiencies, and you're going to improve what you're bringing to the table. You're going to trust that your partner will do the same. You're going to trust and believe they will do the same. Because we're going to break it up out of trying to get the other person to listen, accept, and understand you. Now, in my view, marriage, male, female, is a pressure cooker. And the day you made a commitment, you didn't know it, but you entered the pressure cooker. Now, I don't know if you ever grew up with a pressure cooker. You throw a little bit of water in it. You throw a tough, sinewy piece of meat because you're going to pressurize it. Now, why are you going to pressurize this tough roast? Why not throw it in the oven? Ooh, to tenderize it. So you get speed and efficiency under heat and pressure to tenderize this, make it more edible. This is what happens when we enter into marriage. Nobody tells us. It's a lockdown. They put the lid on it. They throw us on the stove. Everything heats up, and except for that pressure release valve on the top, this whole pot's going to blow. Okay? Now, the goal is to hold the pressure in for positive, constructive transformation. That's the goal. What usually happens is people try to wiggle out of personal growth by constantly focusing on each other. Constantly going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, all under the guise of, you're not hearing me. Now, what does the code phrase, you're not hearing me, really mean? Does it mean they can't hear you? What does the phrase, you're not hearing me, most of the time mean? You don't understand what I'm saying, and or you do understand and you just won't do it. So we need to go over it again. Till you get it or I wear you out. You're going to kneel sooner or later. Marriage relationship or a long-term emotionally committed relationship also has to do, there's no way around it, the reason this is a personal growth approach is what I want to call polarity management. That's a business term, really. It's polarity management. Did you know you're actually in a long-term committed relationship with somebody who is not you? What were you thinking? You married not you. Have you been on a mission to convert that person to be more you? I bet you have at some level. Because being in a relationship with somebody who's so not you and that person is so not with you creates tension. Now, how couples handle this tension to enhance their relationship is what I want to talk about. Because tension reduction in itself is not going to solve this. I mean, if we wanted tension reduction, I'll tell you how to solve it. Eliminate the other person. Murder them. Kill them. Send them off into exile. Eliminate them from your life. Or you can de-self. You can eliminate yourself and just be compliant. And you can say what some of my clients say. I learned to say yes a long time ago. Things just go better that way. Isn't that interesting? So you de-selfed a long time ago? Yeah, I don't really exist. Oh, so you eliminated the other polarity in your relationship and all's good. Yeah. How's your sexual intimacy? It doesn't exist. Oh, okay. Well, there we go. Now, another thing I want you to see is let's embrace the perspective there's always something right about what seems to be going wrong. Does that make sense to you? Now, some people trip up over the idea of right. I'm not trying to describe moral rightness. I'm trying to say there's always something legitimate about whatever it is you're experiencing. Does that make sense? If you were in your car and you were traveling up here and your car started going boom, 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 you might say something's going wrong. On one level, that's correct. But if you got outside and you looked and you had a flat tire, your car should be going like this. Correct? Shouldn't it? Did you know your relationship right now, exactly as it is, should be exactly what it is? I didn't say you like it. Because all the ingredients to make it right now exactly the way it is match reality. Have you ever thought about that? There's everything right about where your relationship is because it matches all of the things going in to make it exactly the way it is. That's not your enemy. You don't have to even say, this shouldn't be happening. Why would anybody say this shouldn't be happening? My friend, it is happening. Let's find the 3 to 5 to 7 legitimate reasons you have exactly what you have. Then we'll figure out how to respond to those. But don't live life protesting, saying, we shouldn't have what we have. You do have what you have. Let's find the good reasons why you have what you have. Then we'll deconstruct it and find out what could be different to come out with a different outcome. Does that make sense? You okay with that? I'm not a therapist who promotes outcomes to work on outcomes. I want outcomes as byproducts of essential ingredients that produce outcomes. If you want a different outcome, you might have to make some changes. But most people in my office want wonderful outcomes without making any changes at all. How do you like that? Then they complain about the outcome that they have. And they want their spouse to make all the changes because they don't like the outcome that they themselves are contributing to. It's a neat game, but it doesn't work. So let's embrace the perspective. There's always something right about what seems to be going wrong. Just because something doesn't make sense or I don't like it, doesn't mean it's going wrong. Let me say that again. Just because something doesn't make sense to your brain, and your brain says, I can't figure this out, or I don't like it, doesn't mean it's going wrong. It's going right. But we got to figure out why it is the way it is so we can respond differently to it and get different outcomes. I don't want artificial outcomes. I want true life, real life, real life outcomes that are sustainable. Nandino, in my office, I really like to help people line up their inner map with external reality. Do you know there's a fundamental rule? If the map you're holding doesn't match the terrain, you got a map of Dallas, and you're in Oklahoma City, and you keep looking for Irve Street, and you're getting so frustrated. That should be Irve Street. If the map you're holding doesn't match the terrain, get a new map. Do you know what we are tempted to do instead of get a new map? Hold on to the map you have and say, I'm convinced this is the right map, and we try to contort reality into the map that we're holding. So I tell my clients, I think your software up here is a 1.5.0 version. Do you know we've upgraded to 4.0? You're 3 upgrades behind. Because this little machine, this little whirling thing, is still whirling. It's trying to line things up and it can't line it up. Let's get your inner map lined up with reality, you'll be much happier. So we've got to make sense of why something is happening exactly the way it's happening. Third, let's reject the perspective that relationships, especially marriage, are designed to meet your needs. I banish that word in my office. I do not allow it. I don't believe in it. Needs, quote, will get met, if that's what you wish to call them. That's not the purpose of any long-term marriage commitment. People complain all the time. My needs aren't getting met. How about in your job? Do you go into your boss and say, frankly, my needs aren't getting met in this job? How about the career you chose? Look, my needs essentially are not getting met. What are your needs? Interesting. Shelter? Safety? That's about it. Food? Water? I don't think marriage ever promised that. So in my office, I like to describe wishes, wants, and desires. Wishes, wants, and desires. Let's throw in the word preferences. Wishes, wants, and desires. I want to be careful on a continuum that these don't become needs, demands, requires. Wishes, wants, and desires do not have to become needs. The moment we use the word need, it's a leg up towards entitlement. When we use wishes, wants, and desires and preferences, I don't know, you might not get it. I'm not going to guarantee you, because you're married to somebody else who has to find the value for making growth changes. If that person can't find the value for themselves, they're not going to do it just for you and sustain it. If they can't find the value of who you want them to be, if they can't find the value for that for them, do you really believe they're going to sustain it for you over a long period of time and then act like they like it? The one brilliance about marriage, which I really, really love doing marital therapy, is when you have a roommate, you can get by with a lot. But I believe, whether you call it Mother Nature, whether you call it God, place desire, attraction, and sexual intimacy right in the heart of a long-term emotionally committed relationship. Right at the very center. How do you get by having sexual intimacy heart to heart, body to body, eyeball to eyeball, and fake it? You can try. The other person can tell. That's what I love about it. It fleshes it out. With a roommate and somebody else, you can be nice, you can be kind. You don't have to make changes. But in a sexual, intimate relationship, you have to find the value of personal growth, because you're eyeball to eyeball and somebody is monitoring and mapping you. We're going to talk more about that. They can even tell in their heart, you're not with me, are you? Try to lie. They'll know you're lying. They know in their heart. So marriage, with its sexual intimacy and its closeness, keeps us honest and brings the best out in us. All the while, we want to run from that. That's what makes sexual intimacy, desire, and connection at the heart of a long-term committed relationship so challenging. It brings out the best in us, not the worst. It brings out the best in us. Because I have to be a stand-up person with a real honest heart commitment. This is why it's about wishes, wants, and desires. It gets at the heart and core. Now, if it's about needs and demands and requires, we can slip our way through it. So let's focus our attention on this. As you're going through these classes, do not answer this question out loud. Please. You have to ask yourself honestly. In your relationship, do you wish to be tolerated, put up with, and endured? Or do you want to be liked and desired by this person in their heart. I didn't say tolerated, put up with, sloughed aside, I'll just have mercy sex with you to get you off my back. You know, you married somebody who's really smart. They can tell. Now, I'm not against mercy sex. We'll talk about more of that later. In the right setting, when there's an emotionally committed, honest relationship, that can be a lot of fun. Do you really want to be liked, loved, respected by this person that you made a commitment to in their heart, that they like you? Or do you want to be tolerated? So I get to ask folks that I'm working with some wonderful questions like, what kind of sex do you want to have? To which men at that point kind of blush and go, are you talking about positions? No. You get to choose, do you want emotionally committed sexual intimacy where you can feel your spouse's heartbeat next to yours, that they long wish and want to be with you in their heart? Or do you want to be tolerated, endured, get it over with, and move on? You get to choose. Because the answer to that question determines what kind of person you want to be. The answer to that question determines what do you really want? Because it's going to bring out the best in you. Now, if it doesn't matter to you, then you got what you got. Don't complain. Don't complain. But if you want something more, then that's what this is designed for, is to give you the very, very best, to make you a better person, to bring out the best in you. And with that, lastly, I want to be real careful about the notion, be careful, of unconditional love. Because that concept can be used from the weak and mature side of people or the mature side. Most of the people in my office use it from the weak and mature side. Do you know what the phrase says? I want love with no conditions. I don't find that to be very realistic. There are conditions to love. To be a really good person, to be liked and admired, you have to earn it. Now, if the idea is, I didn't get married for that, I got married so that you would unconditionally love me, worship me, and I get to be whoever I want to be because that's just who I am. That won't work in marriage. It won't work. You can sell it. I don't think they'll buy it. Love has conditions when we made commitments to bring out the very best in us and to tackle issues of personal growth and to find joy and value in doing so. To find joy and value. The day you can't find the value in it is the day your emotional commitment starts to come unraveled. I can't find the value of doing the personal growth work to be with this person. That's when we all have to take a stop at a stop sign. Now, I understand the notion of unconditional love theologically. I'm not opposed to it. I just don't like how it gets used in marriage. Because the person who's usually screaming for it the most is the one who's usually doing the least. They want something for nothing, and they say, you knew this about me before you married me. Isn't that a neat line? So blame on you. I don't have to be anything but what I am, and you should have checked it out. Sad. Is that a desire killer or a desire enhancer? Do you want to passionately go connect with that person after they tell you that? No. Okay, you get it. The conclusion first, because I tend, as you can already see, to have a lot of stuff that I want to communicate. So instead of getting bogged down and giving you the conclusion last, I'm going to give you the conclusion first. Because I tried to hook you in my email when I said, does marriage kill attraction and desire? The answer is yes. Oh, qualified yes. It kills the initial foundation of what brought you together. It's designed to. Do you know the glue that brought you together in an attraction glue sort of way cannot sustain your lifelong relationship because you're growing people. You know who you were 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago. You're not exactly the same person now that you were then. The same foundation which brought you together brought you together. That was then. We're going forward. The same foundation in romance and attraction that floated the boat for desire, that boat is gone. Not completely, but its initial foundation was designed to glue you together. After that, we have to grow another foundation that sustains attraction and desire. I didn't say it's totally gone. I just say it won't float the boat. This is by design. Nothing is going wrong when this happens. Everything is going exactly, if you prefer God, designed, Mother Nature, or the whole universe. It's going exactly how it should. Please don't protest it. You'll lose. And if you're going to protest LBJ and the traffic on LBJ, it wins, you lose. Because you can stop your car, get out, and shake your fist and say, this shouldn't be this way. Nobody cares. This foundation which brought you together by design is a first foundation. After you came together, you had to develop a second foundation which floats the boat of attraction and desire. Did anybody tell you that? Have you ever known that? Sure you've known that. You've already sensed it. Make sense? Hang with me. The nature of desire. Let's go foundation number one. Desire is looking for its object. When you were dating, weren't you looking for the object of your desire? Yes or no?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, not that you had a top 10 list, but some shadow in the back of your brain was looking for some match to float your boat. And the other person was the same, correct? You were looking for the object of your desire. Now, in this, I'm saying desire is looking for its object because the object holds all the power. Now, I put here high short-term yield. Sounds like we're talking stock options right now, our portfolio. High short-term return. Because the object is the powerful thing. The subject down here in the lower left-hand corner is low investment, low cost. Low investment to the subject. The object has all the power. Now I'm going to give you a few examples and then you help me. I'm going to start across the board. So let's go food, alcohol, and drugs. Low investment, low cost. So if you go to Del Frisco's, you order a nice steak or pork chop or salmon, whatever you order. What holds all of the desire potential? Mm-hmm. The object, the steak. You look forward to the steak, don't you? I can't wait to go eat at Del Frisco's. Mmm, yum, yum, yum. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. What's the investment on your part?
Time and money.
That's about it. You go with time and money and you sit and they deliver the food and you love it. Oh my gosh, this is so good. Wow, wow, wow. Pow, pow, pow. I love this. And now all you did was you got in the car and yes, you paid some money at Del Frisco's or Ruth Chris Steakhouse. It cost you a lot. There is a little investment there. But the food held most of the power of the desire. How about entertainment? You went to see a movie. It was an awesome, incredible experience. What did you do? Low cost. What'd you do? You paid to see a movie. Let's say you went to Vegas and you saw Celine Dion or Barbara Streisand and her recent comeback, or Elton John, oh my gosh. Or somebody, you got on a plane, went out there, they elaborately prepared an environment to wow you and satiate you, and you came out of there, and what'd you say? Hopefully. Wow, that was great, wasn't it? Okay, so What held all the power? The object. What'd you do? Low investment. You got impacted by all the power. Correct? You did very little. So desire was found in the object. Let's keep going up. For men, hang on, men. Pornography, eroticism, strip clubs, massage parlors, high-class prostitutes, paid sex. What holds all the power? The object. Low cost, that is the high short-term yield of all pornography. For every man, high yield, instant erection, powerful visual images, encounters which are exotic and erotic, zero relationship involvement. Would you agree? Zero relationship involvement. You don't have to put up with this person and their foibles and their weaknesses. You're not living with them. It's a paid transaction. They're designed to bring high impact, cost you nothing. You get to walk away, be it internet sex, which is internet videos, pornography. Used to, you have to go across town, buy a magazine or video. Now it's just streaming directly into your home. High yield, instant affirmation, powerful impact, erection, orgasm, zero involvement. Zero. Nada. Nothing. Maybe a cost of money. This is powerful. This is powerful. If you're depleted, lonely, lost, this is a powerful, quick hit, and the object holds all the power. And the objects know it. Have you figured out women in the sex industry know that? They know that. They know that. They're very aware. How about an extramarital affair? So when the pressure cooker is heating up in a long-term emotionally committed relationship, and it's starting, and it's vibrating, and there's an escape valve on top, and it's having trouble transforming, and there's somebody out here who will tell you all that you want to hear about yourself, affirm you, you don't live with them, you might be around them, you work with them, male or female. And compared to this pressure cooker, this looks so much more inviting, and it costs you initially nothing. Initially, nothing. High yield, initial low cost. It's very powerful. Very powerful. So the subject receives, the object has all the desire, and it fulfills. Can you think of anything else that would fall in this category? This is just life. I don't care if it's entertainment, sports, watching football, going to a football game. It's exciting. It's awesome. You drive away in your car on the way home, and it was a very fulfilling experience, albeit it was short term. But it was powerful. Can you give me something else?
Some hobbies, drugs.
Yeah. Drugs, hobbies.
Video games.
Video games. Very much. The allure of conquering the video game brings you back, brings you back, brings you back, brings you back.
Buying shoes.
Oh, I love that. Buying shoes.
That's a hobby.
Talk to our oldest daughter, right? Yes, the wonderful trip that you look so forward to, and yes, there's investment in the planning, but there's high yield because you go to a beautiful place, be it Florence, be it Rome, be it Hawaii, wherever, and it's wonderful, and then it ends. Correct? Now, here's what I want you to see. In romantic attraction, there's a lot going on because your object holds all the desire initially. You love that they are into you and you are into them. We're going to get to that after our break. It's very powerful. But it's time limited. The foundation's going to go away after commitments are secured. It's designed to do that. So there are many things in life that initially are powerful, powerful experiences that produce desire. I'm glad for all of these. I want you to have as many as you can. I just want you to know what they are. Because look at this. Over time in life, desire is looking for a new you. Desire shifts away from the object to the subject. Time out. Does that make sense to you?
No.
You chose the profession of law, let's say. Did you have to invest to become an attorney? Did they just give you the degree for free?
No.
If they had given it to you for free, you would initially said, I'm an attorney! Oh my gosh! If you cheated on an exam to make straight A's, you got your short-term reward. But did you have to invest? You cheated. Desire over time is looking for your personal growth and your investment. If you keep getting stuff for free unconditionally, will it satisfy? For free, with no conditions and no cost. You'll go from object to object to object to object because it's short term. You lack interest. But if you study, become a medical doctor, and you invest, and it taxes you, it challenges you, it asks for high investment and high cost for high long-term yield, is there a better chance that you find satisfaction in it? Why? It asked something from you. If we're going to be married for a long term and we stay stuck with the first approach, here's what it looks like. Oh, you don't turn me on. You used to be what you used to be. You used to act special towards me. You used to affirm me, validate me. Your eyes used to light up when you walked into the room. I walked into the room. You used to dress better for me. You used to work out. You used to do this. You used to do this. You don't do any of it anymore. I have no desire for you. You hold all the key. You hold the power to my desire. Light me up. Or as Mick Jagger would say, start me up. You never know till you start me up. You make a grown man cry. Right? Start me up. The burden's on you. You're the object of my desire. Do it for me. Now, how is the object now feeling? A joy? Oh my gosh, I just love being your object of desire. Let me work really hard at pumping you up. Is that usually what the object says? No, the object's tired of it. The object's tired of it. The object now says, this is a real burden. I want to see an investment from you, an investment from me. So after object has all the power, there is a shift that's taking place where now the burden is on the subject to invest and grow and be a new me, a different me, a new me that challenges myself to grow with my object because this is the object of my desire. You got your object of desire when you got married. You got your object. Now what's supposed to happen? You got to invest long term towards personal growth to keep desire alive. So we could say in life, how about this? Acting in a play. Did they give you a role for nothing? You had to learn your lines. You had to work hard. You had to beat out 10 other people. You got that. When the audience claps, what do you feel? Like a cheat? Like you pulled the wool over everybody's eyes? You earned it. Doesn't that feel satisfying? Because you challenged yourself to grow. The object now of the source of satisfaction does not lie within your partner or the fact that you were on stage. The source of your satisfaction equally shifts to you're proud of yourself. You have high self-esteem. This is where we're getting down to in your sexual interaction. If you decide to grow and take yourself on, it's not about totally pleasing your partner. It's about taking your own growth on, trying new things, and being pleased with who you are and facing your biggest fears, because you're trying to run from them, harnessing it. I don't know whether your partner is going to be satisfied or not, but you can be. Yes, you can. And by the way, it's one of the greatest ways to turn your partner on is when you stop carrying the burden to turn them on. Did that make sense? Oh, the room got quiet. You okay? Everybody all right? If you carry all the burden of your partner's self-esteem to turn them on, it's a desire killer. It's opposite. So how about this? Mastering a musical instrument. Did you just learn to play guitar, violin, or whatever in 3 easy lessons? Now you had to work hard at it. Hard, hard, hard. And the day you performed before people because you mastered, worked, faced your biggest fears, stepped out in front of people, I know they got a reward out of it, but where was the bigger reward? Where was it? In your own self-mastery. Do you see how now the desire is shifting? If the only reward was the audience clapped for me, that can't be the only reward. The reward is I worked hard for it, mastered my biggest fears, got out there, put myself in the game, worked harder than anybody, and they clapped. Do you see how this distributes out now? But in marriage, everybody thinks, no, it should just happen naturally. I don't have to work for it. You're supposed to produce it in me. Where did we learn that? That's not going to work. You get it? Okay. Desire is looking for a new subject. How about graduate school, medical school, MBA, law degree? How about growing a business? How about doing something after you've raised children, you go off in a new career and you say, you know what, I'm going to enhance my life, I've raised children, I've stayed at home, I'm going to take myself on and do something different and scare myself to death and get out there and go for it. Whoa, you'll create a foundation for desire. How about learning to ski? Oh, how about playing golf? There is no short-term reward in the game of golf. There is no short-term reward in the game of golf. So now when we level this out, the subject is active, the object is passive. But when we started out, the object was active and the subject was passive. This is called growth. Now the subject is the active ingredient, providing a foundation for desire. Satisfaction and desire come more internal than from external. The other way, it came all from the external. Now it's leveled out to produce a long-term, wonderful result. Get it? We'll take a time out, take a 10-minute break. Hang on, we'll cover some more. Okay, so does it make sense that in the beginning, desire is looking for its object? The object holds most of the power to produce the desire. The object is the active element. The subject is the passive receiving element. Right? Over time, that has to change. Because the foundation for desire long term has to include the growth of the subject. The subject has to invest so it's not just receiving something from its object. That's true across the board in life. You will grow bored with it. If it gives you all the good feelings and asks nothing from you, you will despise it later. You will reject it. You will lose respect for it. You'll lose respect for yourself. So marriage and a long-term emotionally committed relationship is designed now to shift the balance so that the subject must invest. That's the way it is. Nobody told you. All right, now see, in light of that, if this quote makes sense to you, by Sebastian Moore, a Benedictine monk, all his life, lives in Boston. The growth of a person is the progressive liberation of desire. You're liberating desire when you choose to grow. It is the process whereby desire finds ever more deeply its subject, you. Whereby a desire comes to be in one who can say, ever more deeply and wholly greater in life, I want. People who do not invest in personal growth cannot want. They only want to be wanted. Did I lose you? People who don't invest in growth want to be admired, respected, loved, adored for nothing other than that they exist. They'll go find somebody, but soon it will turn on them. Or they'll go from thing to thing, person to person, because they cannot want. In psychology, we say they don't have enough ego strength to want. They're scared people, insecure, fear-based, and threatened, who kill desire. They only want to be wanted. But the person who grows liberates desire, because you have to have capacity, courage to want. Do you know what most people say immediately when they sensation to want? They kill it and they say, I don't want to get hurt. Do you understand what I just said? So they're always measuring their capacity to stand on their own two feet and be a growing, stand-up, courageous person who says, give me that next mountain. I want to work hard to climb. I'm going to face my biggest fears. I'm going to go through everything. I got there. Or want more. Because they're not scared people. They're courageous people who once became musicians, who then became actors, who then wrote plays, who then produced movies. Because one desire begat another desire, and they said, I can face my biggest fears. They came to be a person who can wholly say, I want, and I'm not afraid to want. The bottom line in life is not, I could get hurt. The bottom line is life's an adventure. Do you have the courage to want? But everybody wants something for nothing. I don't want to want, I want you to want me. Make sense? Does the quote make sense? This is about spiritual growth. This is what spiritual growth is designed to do. It's designed to produce people who want. Passive, insecure, frightened people only want to be wanted. They don't have the ego strength to have desire. So the solution is they kill desire. All right? So let's... Yeah. Go ahead.
Go back on that side. Can you say then, and maybe I'm wrong, that desire is looking for an improved subject?
Yes.
Not a new object?
Yes. Desire is looking for an ever-growing, courageous, improved subject. That's life. Here's a favorite quote from Carl Jung, J-U-N-G. Carl Jung. Here it is. All neuroses... old-fashioned word for self-imposed suffering. All neuroses are the result of a person's refusal to legitimately suffer. Takes courage to want. Takes courage to face your fears. Takes courage to say, in spite of my fears, I want to learn to snow ski. In spite of my fears, I want to stand up and perform. In spite of my fears, which we all have, and my anxieties. I'm not going to let my anxieties and my fear-based insecurities get into my way for what I really want in life. Carl Jung said, you're going to suffer either way. Choose which suffering. You can avoid this and be a fear-based human being, never rise up and do anything and have your own pathology and expect somebody to want you, desire you, admire you, respect you. That's called immaturity and Peter Pan syndrome. It's called getting something for nothing. Christians wrap it up in, I want to be loved unconditionally. Well, I'm supposed to have great desire for you, and you get to sit on the sofa, eat chips, drink beer, not exercise, and I'm supposed to want you. Yes, you knew this about me before you married me. So fooey on you. It's called loving without conditions. Don't put any conditions on me. That's putting pressure on me. Life puts pressure on us. Got it? So let's go to the next slide. You're doing great. Now, because I've walked you through Foundation 1 and Foundation 2, I hope this makes sense now. The nature of desire is personal growth must keep pace with the degree of difficulty or the significance of your partner in your life. They're growing more significant, more significant, more significant in your life every day you're with them. Agree? They matter. Your personal growth, my personal growth, must keep pace with the amount of significance for desire and attraction to remain alive. Desire and attraction fade when we stop growing. So here is the bunny slope. So when you start out at ski school, you ski the bunny slope and you learn to snowplow, you learn to stop, you learn to barely move with the weight. You get more secure. When you master that, did you hear that? When you master yourself and your skills on this degree of difficulty, what do? We go to the green slope, correct? And you feel a little bit of anxiety, correct? This is brand new. It's scary. So you master your ski skills. You go out with the pro. He works with you because the degree of difficulty is now a little bit more. We're going to strengthen your skill set. Over time, with practice, you feel pleasure and delight, correct? Where did the pleasure and delight come from? The slope? You mastered yourself on the slope, correct? After you do it 25 times, do you feel excitement or boredom?
Boredom.
So the soul is longing for a new challenge. So a friend says, let's go down the blue. I'm sorry, it's double diamond black, but sorry. Sorry. So now you have to master new skills, practice, you're scared, but you find the value, don't you? And over time, you learn to have pleasure because you're mastering yourself with a greater degree of difficulty and you're finding pleasure in that self-mastery. And when you do it 100 times, guess what? What are you? You're bored. Now you go double diamond black. Do you see the progression is called the dialectic of desire? This is life. When you master one thing, it's the challenge. You master your fears. Then you receive pleasure. Over time, it gets boring. You're longing for a new pleasure and for a new sensation to master yourself. Sally will tell you, we have three children, girl, boy, girl, 28, 25, 22. Our 22 is graduating from University of Texas in May. Woohoo! Right? Two Aggies and a Longhorn. We encourage them to learn to master themselves using rides at Six Flags. We started with the mini mine train when they were little, 6 years old, and they would be terrified. And with time, patience, over and over and over, they'd lift their hands up and go hands-free. You ever seen little kids do that? Then they'd grab. Then they do this. After the 15th time, they're bored. Then they go to the mine train. Same process. Then they go to the first real roller coaster across the pond, Judge Roy Scream. Big Hill. Thank you. Big Hill. Click, 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 click. Designed to build anxiety. Get to the top. So I coached all of them. When you get to the top, it's going to be deathly quiet. It's going to ride over the top. when it starts going down, throw yourself forward, go with the car, scream bloody murder, and go with the car. Go with it. Don't push back. Don't push back. Ride with it. Ride the ride. They would do that, get off and go, let's go again. So they were all riding the Titan and the Texas Giant. By age 14, they were doing all the rides because they learned the ride doesn't produce the thrill. It's just a vehicle to master themselves on so they can ride the ride rather than the ride ride them. That's life, my friend. To ride the ride so the ride doesn't ride you. You get it? I just described sexual intimacy. People say sex should come effortlessly. My friend, where did you learn that? You're just going to get naked, throw your clothes off, and you're going to have instant desire, and it all happens naturally? The universe is not designed that way. You have to practice, master your fears, threats, and insecurities, do something different, feel foolish, make a fool of yourself, make mistakes, laugh a lot, and find great satisfaction that you just tried something you never thought you would try, and over and over and over, if you master it, you'll like yourself, and your partner will go, holy Toledo, I am so proud of you, wow. It's about self-mastery inside you. It's not, sex isn't just for your partner. It's for you. It's for you to master yourself, to ride the ride so the ride doesn't ride you. It's a joy, a privilege, a test. It builds intimacy. So we must keep up with the degree of difficulty. Let's call this the scale of significance, because now we're not talking about roller coasters. 100, 0. The higher up somebody up the scale is in your life, let's say the clerk at Dillard's is down here between a 1 and a 10, I hope. If you tell me they're up here in the 90 percentile, we got to talk. Family members above a 50% to a 65 to a 70% matter. Your spouse up here in the 90 percentile, would you agree? So the higher up the scale of significance somebody is in our life, the more of a self you need, not less. You don't need any self at all to relate people down here who don't matter. You can be kind to them, you can be nice, you can like them, and you look real mature. But the higher we press you up, the steeper the ski slope is. I want to see whether you can hang on to yourself and you can ski that slope. When the degree of significance of your partner outweighs your own set of ski skills and your own value, you're upside down. Let me say it again. When how much value you place on your partner out of a 1 to 100, you place 99 percentile of importance on them, 1% on you, you can't ski. Do you know the first thing that's going to get killed? Desire. Do you see, if your ski skills are only at a green right here, and we put you on double diamond black, and your ski skills are only green, what happened to desire? Fear. Huh?
Fear.
Turns into fear. You know what the first thing people say? I could care less. I don't want to. I have no desire. When people are out of balance because the worth and value of their partner they've assigned is 90% and only 10% to themselves, they're upside down and can't make any movement in their relationship. You know what their first solution is? Kill desire. Avoid it. They can't ski the slope. They're too scared. They're overwhelmed. So in my office, when somebody has low sexual desire, I'm going to find 3 to 5 to 7 good reasons they shouldn't have any desire at all. I'm looking for them. Because they think they should. I'm saying there ought to be good reasons why you have zero sexual desire. I want to find them. Your brain can't add them up. Because you're overwhelmed, something's going on, you can't ski this slope, and somewhere along the line, it's like taking somebody, with a golf swing, and putting them on an exceedingly difficult golf course. And they're a beginning golfer. What happens to desire after three holes? I want to quit this game. I hate it. It's no fun. I can't stand it. I can't believe I'm out here. They're filled with stress. Their skills can't match the degree of importance. You still with me? So the very first thing that happens is they kill desire. The best way is to regroup them and begin to help them grow, develop a solid foundation, which is what we're going to talk about next week, so you have a foundation for desire. I got to equalize the balance of power in this relationship. If your partner is worth 90 out of 100 and you're only worth 10, you can't ski this slope. You lost your position a long time ago and you're supposed to have desire? You're just thinking, I'm supposed to have desire for them to please them. What happened to your desire? Oh, I left that a long time ago. We got to change that. What about what brings joy to you? Oh, I gave that up a long time ago to please them. Ooh, like that's going to work? I don't think that's going to work. And you already figured it out. It's not going to work. Okay, I'm going to hit this, but we're going to pause. Tell me if the idea of keeping pace so that desire remains alive makes sense to you. Your growth must keep pace with the degree of difficulty or you will kill desire. Does that make sense to you? Can you give me any other example in your life? It doesn't have to be sexual. It's across the board. Can you tell me in your career where your skill set did not match what was asked of you? Go ahead.
Parenting.
Parenting.
Yes.
Parenting. That is awesome.
Kids are way up there in my skill set based on my parents' teachings. It's probably
way low.
Yeah.
That's excellent, Russell. Is it fun?
No.
No. Do you feel lost, confused, frustrated? All the above.
Yes.
Yeah. Give me another example. Our personal growth must keep pace in a long-term, emotionally committed relationship, or the first thing to go is desire. Make sense? Give me another example in life, if you can think of any example. I gave you playing golf, snow skiing.
Business.
Business. Give me, tease it out. Where would what's asked exceed a skill set?
I was thinking of the other way, that if you keep doing the same thing over and over, you're going to lose interest.
Excellent.
Continue to look for new challenges.
Do you see that life, do you know that we're most of the time seeking safety, security, and what Freud called homeostasis? Equilibrium. We long for safety, security, but once we get it, once we get it, we want something more. That's the universe. It's beckoning to us that life's a great adventure. So is a long-term, emotionally committed relationship. To keep it alive, we can personally grow. But what people have learned to do is to confront their spouse. I'm bored with you. You're the cause of my boredom. No, they're not. Your lack of growth is the cause of your own boredom. And theirs too. We have to switch it. But we ID it, I'm bored, it's your fault. No. I can help you become a different person with the same long-term person. You can become a new and different person. And guess what? The moment I help you do that, do you think your spouse will rise up and say, oh my gosh, thanks for making so many wonderful changes in your life. I can't believe that you're growing. How can I support you? Is that usually what the spouse says? No. The spouse usually says, what do you think you're doing? Even though they've been complaining about you for years, the moment you take it seriously and make an improvement, now they feel threatened because you upset the apple cart and they'll fight you. Because now they're scared, because if you really grow without them, they're afraid, where is it going to leave them? This is why I can improve marriages and I don't need, require, demand the other person be in my office. I only need one. Do you know that? So when somebody says, you know, I'm trying to get my spouse to come, but they won't come. I say, don't let them. I don't care. You come. Well, I'm scared if I come, they'll think we're talking about them. I don't care what they think. You think by going to appeal to them, honey, please come to me with couples therapy. I met a really neat guy and he can tell you how to improve your life. They're not going to come and see me. You come. And that person says, well, I'll get back to you. And they stay stuck. The moment they step out, guess what the other spouse says later when they come home? What'd you talk about? Well, if you want to find out, come with me. I don't want to come with you. I just want to know what you talked about. Ooh, what a neat game. Does it make sense? Very creative. So all the while they're complaining, we have a boring, stuck relationship and I want you to change. The moment that person takes them seriously and says, I'm going to change, with or without your permission. Whoa, 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 whoa. I didn't mean that. Well, what did you mean? No, I mean you need to run it by me so I can have complete control. That ain't happening. I'm leaving you hanging. Okay. You okay? Everybody good? Did you have any idea we would be talking about stuff like this when you came in tonight? Is this different? I don't know what you expected, but is it a little bit different than what you expected? I hope so. I hope you're fascinated by it and go, whoa, we're talking about the nature of desire, attraction, connection, personal growth, how to keep it alive. It not only works in marriage, it works across the board. Business, life. It's the nature of the universe. Why don't we tap into it and say, I get it. I'm going to stop protesting. I'm going to stop folding my arms and protesting. I'm going to embrace, accept, and ride the ride. So the ride doesn't ride me. You know you're in it. You might as well sign on and embrace it. Why are you pushing back growth of the universe when the whole universe is inviting and beckoning you forward in growth? What are you afraid of? Why are you pushing back? Embrace it. You're on the roller coaster. I told my kids, once it goes up that hill, do not push back because you're just a victim now and you're going down. You know what? Whether you want to or not, you're going down. And if you're going down, you might as well ride the ride. You might as well go all in. You got everything to gain. You got everything to gain. All right, next week, we're going to start right here about romance, the precursor to marriage. And one of the things we're going to do, I'll give you a teaser, is I'm going to play you four excerpts of songs next week. Here's one. You know this song? All right, we're going to play the first part of the chorus. It's a sweet addiction. Is it a love song or is it what holds all the power? Is it a first phase or a second phase?
First.
Completely first. I want you to see how many songs you hear on the radio that describe the object holds all the power of your desire. You hold none. And it actually describes it as addiction. What a sweet addiction I'm in. I've got song after song song after song, song after song, of the euphoric experience where the object holds all of the desire and wows you and slays you and produces the euphoric feelings in you. It's going to end. Just saying. It's all coming.
I haven't heard your song.
My song?
A song about how it's all going to end.
Oh, I got some of those. I got some of those.
Have you ever seen The Gambler's Hell, Twilight Zone?
Huh, The Gambler's Hell?
Hell. So, short story, but the guy gets killed, and or thinks he gets killed, and in a robbery, and then he comes into a village, and he's a gambler.
Mm-hmm.
He robs the bank again, and he runs away with the money and has tons of money. Then he goes into the saloon and wins and wins and wins, and he's kind of like, oh, I got killed, I must be in heaven. So he tries it every time, every day. Everything he does, he succeeds in. There's no challenge. And at the end of the whole episode, he's like, I don't like winning anymore. It's boring. I can't do anything. It's like, this is not heaven. And the guy, the one character that he always meets, just says, what do you think where you are?
There it is. See you next week.
Yeah.
Great time. Next week, we build on this. See ya.